Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. To ask a question during the Q&A session, press star 1. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'll turn the meeting over to Amy Montgomery. You may begin.
Thank you, Audra. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar. My name is Amy Montgomery, one of the organizers for today's call. We really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. Today's webcast is presented by the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Mental Health, and the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative. The title of today's webcast is MIS Refresher. You will hear from a panel of speakers today, and our speakers are with DMH, Dr. Mary Smith, Associate Director for Decision Support Research and Evaluation, Terry Schoonover with the Collaborative, who's a Business Systems Analyst too, Trish Gorda, Business Systems Analyst 2, Cheryl Massalunas, Business Analyst 3, and myself, Amy Montgomery, Training Coordinator. Before we begin the formal presentation, I would like to review with everyone a few helpful tools and housekeeping items for the online portion of the forum. One, if you happen to get disconnected from the audio portion, please call back into the same number you just dialed, 1-888-677-0065, and the passcode is Illinois. The visual portion of this presentation is web-based. Of course, you can choose the audio portion only, but if you would like to log in to see the webinar, presentation, and PowerPoint, the login information is located on the invite you received after you registered. If you are experiencing any problems with that particular link to join, you can also go to www.joinwebinar.com and enter the webinar ID number, which is 289-727-890. There will be a designated question and answer portion towards the end of today's presentation. We ask that attendees hold their questions until the designated question and answer period. The operator will then open the lines for you at that time. And lastly, at the conclusion of the presentation today, we ask that you please complete the brief satisfaction survey that will appear when you close out of the online forum. It should take less than 5 minutes to complete the survey, and we value your feedback. The training agenda today will include DMH introduction, consumer eligibility files, VO data exchanges with HFS, Provider Connect registration, as well as a demo and error resolution, batch registration, as well as an overview and submission process, viewing consumer funds, IT consumer support with multiple RIN resolution, and reporting. Without further ado, we will now begin the formal presentation, and I would like to turn the call over to our first speaker for today, Dr. Mary Smith.
Thanks, Amy. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We hope that you'll find this presentation useful and informational. So just to set a little bit of a context, this is indeed a refresher. We know that there are many folks out there who have been sending data, particularly registrations, to the collaborative for the last 3 to 4 years, but we also know that there's been turnover. So this seems like a good time to just do a general review and remind people of the tools that are available to them. So today we'll focus on some of the key processes associated with the registration. We'll look a little bit at the availability of resources that have been created to assist providers. Just a little bit of a historical perspective. The registration is really based on work undertaken with the mental health community. And by mental health community, I mean providers, consumers. Illinois worked a lot with other states, with federal government, with members of academia, with family members, to identify data elements that are important to support decision making in many arenas. And some of those areas include service delivery planning, policy development, and budgeting. So for several years, folks got together and work to develop good operational definitions for the data elements that were identified as being important, And then time was spent to standardize the definitions and the possible responses that folks could select when they were submitting data. In Illinois, we added some additional data elements that are necessary for management, you know, just as other states would add specific data elements for their state. We use the data in lots of ways. One key thing that we do is we use it to understand who's receiving treatment, and then we link that information to what services are received. So as you know, the registration is comprised of demographic and clinical data elements. The data is used for decision support, again, for planning and budgeting purposes. I think many of you know that Illinois receives mental health block grant funds from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration through the Center for Mental Health Services. In order to continue to receive that federal funding, which is an important piece of the way that we purchase services for individuals in the state, it's necessary for DMH to do reporting to SAMHSA on a number of the data elements that are included in the registration, as well as information garnered from the claims that are submitted. And so in a sense, you know, if you look at the block grant, which we post on the DHS-DMH website every year, you'll see some of the data reflected in that that document. We are also, as you know, engaged in conversations about accountability, performance, measurement. Certainly at the federal level, folks are interested in finding out what happens when they give us dollars to support services for individuals. You know, do those folks improve? Are we helping to support folks' recovery? And so some of the data elements that we have built into the registration help us look at some of that data. In fact, when you do a re-registration, you're really giving us the ability to look at change across time in terms of some key data elements. And then I think many of you also know that there's certainly been much discussion in the state about budgeting for results. And in terms of being able to look at outcomes associated with state dollars that are allocated for mental health services. And so what we're trying to do is use data, for the most part, that we already collect to be able to address those issues. As many of you know, or as everyone should know, we're also looking for folks to report registration data in a timely way. We have a 90-day registration edit that was implemented several years ago. The reason for that is so that we can collect data and analyze it for all of the purposes that I just covered. It's important that we have data and we receive data in a timely way. You know, just another point, I've heard some folks talk about holding registrations. Really, there's no reason to hold registrations. Just reviewing the data elements, you know, this is information that most of you get from an assessment. If it's an emergency situation, you know, it's easily understood that it's difficult to get that information. It might take you a week or two to get it, but once you get it, we need you to go ahead and report it. If you can't get it, of course, you know, there is a response that you can report that basically says the data is not available. So no reason to wait to hold registrations. Folks get paid for registrations regardless of whether an individual is Medicaid or non-Medicaid. So again, you know, my point is to urge you to go ahead and submit those registrations after you do the assessment ASAP. So at this point, I'm going to turn the call over to Terry Schoonover. Terry?
Thanks, Mary. Hi, everyone. I'm Terry Schoonover. I'll be leading the training for the next two agenda items. First, we'll start out with consumer eligibility files. The eligibility files that are currently being used are recipient eligibility file and the Williams Class consumer eligibility file. And we'll look at each one of these separately. The recipient eligibility file contains multiple pieces of data. It identifies consumers that have STBO, Social Services B. Without the STBO, the consumer can't be registered. So very vital that that information is sent across from HFS to VO. It identifies consumers that are Medicaid eligible. If they are not Medicaid eligible, certain clinical authorizations will not be approved. It identifies consumers that are in SAS. If a consumer is in SAS, they can only be registered for a limited amount of funds. Currently, those funds are 121, ICG, and ICG Community. And again, this recipient eligibility file is sent from HFS to VO. Now, the Williams Class Consumer Eligibility File is actually a file sent from DMH to VO. Per DMH direction, VO loads each consumer with Williams eligibility, which is indicated by the EWCC fund. Now, if you ever see EWCC fund on a consumer's record, do know that this is only allowing the consumer to be registered for consumer Williams class. It doesn't mean the Williams class funds has been assigned yet. So once the EWCC fund is assigned, you're allowed as a provider to register that consumer for the Williams class fund, and you will see that WCC fund will be assigned to the consumer record. And that brings us to the next agenda item, VO data exchanges with HFS. Now, before I actually get into the data exchanges themselves, I want to talk just a little bit about the HFS claims processing overview. HFS processes all claims submitted on or after 7/1/2011. VO does not process these. The registrations, the OBRA codes, provider site funding records all must be accepted by HFS before a claim can be successfully processed by HFS. In addition to this, a clinical authorization must also be accepted by HFS for services that require authorizations. Now, do note, a claim can reject for reasons outside of the scope, but these are the data elements that HFS must have from VO in order for a claim to process successfully. The VO data exchanges with HFS are as follows, consumer registration, OBRA codes, which are the reimbursement rate for the ABC fund, clinical authorization, provider site fund codes, which are the funds in which a site is contracted, and also a MARS file, which contains claims data from HFS. Now, to look at each one of these individually, consumer registration, VO processes the registration and assigns the funds accordingly. VO sends the fund information to HFS within one business day. HFS then processes the file, so they accept or reject each individual record in the file and send the results to VO by the second business day. So keep in mind, if a provider submits a registration to Value Options and is successfully processed on Monday, it's a two-day turnaround time from that success to be sent to HFS, then HFS to process and send back to VO. The OBRA code, much like the registration process, when VO processes a registration, an OBRA code is actually created. So not only does the registration process assign the funds, but it's also the time the OBRA code gets created. The OBRA code represents the rate of reimbursement for claims that pay from the ABC fund, and those can pay at a rate of 0, 20%, 40, 60, 80, all the way up to 100%. And all of that is based on registration data from the provider, so the income, family size, et cetera. VO then sends the OBRA codes to HFS within one business day, and again, HFS processes the file, accepts or rejects each individual record, and sends the results to VO by the second business day. Clinical authorizations. VO processes the authorization request. VO sends the approved authorizations to HFS within one business day. And again, HFS processes the file, accepts or rejects each individual record, and sends the results back to VO by the second business day. Provider site fund codes. These are handled just a little bit differently. These funds that a site has available to use for claims reimbursement, such as ABC, 821, et cetera, and DMH actually sends site fund code changes to VO. VO updates the record in the VO system. VO then forwards the change to HFS so that the HFS system can be updated as well. So this is a update that originated from DMH. It makes a pit stop at VO to be updated in our system and then just forwarded onto HFS so the same change can be made in the HFS system. And finally, the MARS file. After HFS processes a claim, the claim data is sent to VO for reporting purposes, and this data is sent to VO in what's called the MARS file. This is what allows VO to report on all the claims data, even though we're not actually processing claims at this point. HFS is doing all the processing of claims and then sending us all the information on those claims. And at this time, I'll turn over the presentation to Amy Montgomery.
Thanks, Terry. I will be covering Provider Connect and online registration. Provider Connect is easily accessed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can complete multiple transactions in a single setting, and those include obtaining information on consumer eligibility and benefit status, registering and re-registering consumers, closing consumer registrations, updating address information, and the assumptions are that each user has a valid Illinois Mental Health Collaborative provider ID and password, and that each user has been set up within the Provider Connect application. How to access Provider Connect? You go to Illinois Mental Health Collaborative website, click on For Providers. The Provider Connect login will be on the right. All the providers, all providers will be able to obtain one online logon per provider ID, and this is via the website. To obtain additional logons for Provider Connect, contact the Collaborative EDI Help Desk at 1-888-247-9311, and that is Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. The turnaround for additional logons is 48 hours. Before I begin, I would like to inform the audience that all of the information given today can be found at www.illinoismentalhealthcollaborative.com. All this information is on the provider website under provider information. There's the registration title and the subtitled Provider Connect Registration Guide, dated December of 2011. The registration process is used to determine a consumer's eligibility and enroll them into available programs for claims reimbursement. The consumer registration data is vital to accurate reporting and decision making. It is important that information concerning the consumer be reported and updated every 6 months. To register a consumer, it is first necessary to obtain a RIN and DHS social services for the consumer. Only consumers with DHS SS on file with the collaborator will be allowed to be registered. The process for obtaining a RIN and DHS SS is through the eRIN system. This information will be updated in the collaborative within 5 business days. In the collaborative, system programs are labeled as funds. And we strongly encourage all providers to read or reread the guides located at www.illinoismentalhealthcollaborative.com. And now I would like to, before I begin the live demo, I would like to show you an example of a red dot error and a successful submission. When completing a registration for a consumer, if a mandatory field is overlooked, and those are all fields with an asterisk, a red dot error will appear. It will show you where the field was missed, and that must be completed before moving on. This is an example of a successful submission confirmation. After you've completed all the fields that are mandatory, you will come to this screen, and it will show you that it has been approved. Now we will begin the live demo. This is the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative website. This is the provider homepage. This is where you would click to log in. This is the Provider Connect area. If you have already registered, you will just simply click log in. If you have not registered, you will click this button first. For today's demonstration, I will use the demo button. This is the Provider Connect login screen. Notice that the user ID and password are mandatory fields with an asterisk. After you've completed those fields, click login. The Provider Connect user agreement. After you have read through that, scroll to the bottom, click I agree. And this is your Provider Connect homepage. Today I will demonstrate how to search for a specific consumer and then view their current registration. To find a specific consumer, we'll simply click here. This will show you the eligibility and benefits search page. Enter the member ID number and the date of birth. Click search. This will take you to the demographics page. You can click on the menus tab to further view enrollment history, POB, benefits, and additional information. Click enrollment history, and the page displays the funds that the consumer has on file with the collaborative. If the member was eligible for SAS or CHP, you will see that here, along with the effective date and expiration date. Now I will show you how to register a member. Simply enter your provider ID here. Click the Illinois Mental Health tab there. And this is a consumer registration page. To start the registration process allows providers to manage enrollment of the consumers with the funding sources and ensure required information is provided to maintain the consumer's eligibility. Once you have entered all of the information here, scroll down, click Next. This is where you select the funds. Click Next. Funds continued. This page is a diagnosis and first presentation assessment. This is where you will enter the functional impairment and assessment scores. This is where you will enter any history of illness. This is the MH cross disability. And finally, this is the guardian information. As I showed you before, after you have successfully entered all that information, you will get this confirmation page showing that it has been approved. All right, now we're going back. Going to click View Member Registration here. Scroll down. And this is where you will re-register. Please note that when a re-registration is completed for a consumer, the effective date will not change, but the expiration date will be extended to reflect the 6-month re-registration period. Consumer re-registration will be used for the following: to re-register a consumer and update key fields to extend the coverage period for 6 months. And when a re-registration is completed for the consumer, the effective date will not change, but their expiration date will be extended. There is a consumer registration record for each fund for which the consumer was registered. You continue through the screens, as I just previously showed you. And when you're done with the first consumer registration, then you would just hit submit at the end, and you will see the approval screen. And there it is. To close a consumer registration, we're going to return. Scroll down, click the View Member Registration button again. Scroll down and click Close Registration. It is important that the consumer status be updated when he or she is no longer enrolled in a special program or when the consumer is no longer being seen for services. As well as if an end date of a special program, and this will end the selected special programs. The consumer will still be registered for all of the other registered funds. So here is where you will enter that information. I will again bring up a sample for a consumer to review. Show you how to an address change. If any address changes need to be done, you will just click here. Fill in the required information and click Submit. The red dot will show you that the consumer's address has been updated. This concludes the Provider Connect registration portion. And now I'm going to turn it over to Trish Gorda.
Good afternoon. In the last demo, Amy showed you how to submit registration one consumer at a time in Provider Connect. In this portion of the training, I'll show you how to submit a batch file of registrations using the batch registration submission process, which is also in Provider Connect. In a moment, we'll walk through the Provider Connect screens showing how to submit a batch registrations file and how to retrieve response files. However, to have a full understanding of everything you'll need to know to successfully submit batch registration files, you'll need to refer to the batch registration submission guide on the collaborative website. In the guide, you'll find information on obtaining a submitter ID and password. If you don't already have a submitter ID, you can get one by completing an account request form available on the collaborative website. The guide also gives you the file specifications required for your batch file, such as the file type and length and trailer record specifications. You'll also find the batch file layout, such as field names, lengths, positions, and descriptions. You'll also find information on error processing, such as error codes and descriptions. So where will you find the guide? The batch registration submission guide can be found on the collaborative website in the provider information section. And we also show the URL on the screenshot here. So now we're going to walk through the batch registration submission process in Provider Connect. From your provider homepage, you'll select the EDI homepage option on the left-hand side of the screen. From the EDI homepage, you can submit a new batch file, see the batch files you've previously submitted, and retrieve your response files. We'll get into response files in more detail in a few moments, but for now, we'll select the Submit Batch File button. In step one, select the form type, Batch Reg, and then click the Next button. On the next screen in step two, click the next button again. In step three, click the browse button and find and attach your batch file. Then click the submit button. In step four, we see that our file was submitted successfully and that we'll receive an email shortly containing the submission number. But don't celebrate just yet. Your batch file may have been sent successfully, but it still needs to pass several file formatting checks. If any one of these checks fail, your batch file will reject. In other words, just because you see this screen saying that your file was submitted successfully and you received an email with a submission number does not mean that your batch file was accepted. You must download the summary response file coinciding with the submission number to verify that your batch file was accepted. If the summary file shows that your batch file was rejected, you'll need to correct the batch file and resubmit. More on response files in a few moments. But first, there are several reasons why your batch file could be rejected. The first is that the batch file may not be formatted correctly. The second is that the trailer record may not be formatted correctly, or it may not exist at all. As I mentioned earlier, successful batch submission depends on meeting the file specifications and batch file layout found in the batch registration submission guide found on the collaborative's website. The file will reject if it does not meet these specifications. Whether your file rejected or not, the next step now is to retrieve your response files. You could receive up to three response files for each batch file you submitted. You will always receive a summary file, which will show if the batch file was accepted or rejected due to a file layout or trailer record error. If your file rejected, this is the only file you'll receive. The reason the batch file was rejected will be shown on the file. You might also receive an accepted file, which contains all of the registration records that were accepted. If none of the records on your batch file were accepted, then you won't receive an accepted file. And finally, you might also receive an error file, which contains all registration records that were rejected. If all the records on your batch file were accepted, you won't receive an error file. So if your batch file was accepted, in other words, if it was not rejected, and some of your registration records were accepted, and some of the registration records were rejected, then you will receive three response files, a summary file, an accepted file, and an error file. It is absolutely critical that you download these response files as soon as you receive them, to ensure that any rejected batch files or registration records are corrected as soon as possible and resubmitted. So now, to retrieve the response files, we need to return to the EDI homepage. You'll find your response files in the incoming files section. Our example here shows three files. So you can assume that you have a summary file, an activity file, and an error file here. And how can I assume that? Just by looking at the file names. When you submitted your batch file, you were sent an email containing a batch submission number. Each type of response file has a different naming convention, and the batch submission number is incorporated within the file name. Again, you'll need to refer to the Batch Registration Submission Guide for specifics on release file naming conventions. The first file you'll probably want to download is the summary file, which will tell you if your batch file was accepted or rejected. So simply click on the hyperlinked file name to download it, and that will bring you to the View Incoming Files screen. And again, click on the hyperlinked file name, and that will begin the download process. Then you will come to this screen, and you are asked if your file was downloaded successfully. If it was, click the Yes button, and you'll be returned to the EDI homepage in case you have more response files to download. If it was not downloaded successfully, click the No button, and you'll be taken to this screen where you will be able to try to download the file again using the EDI homepage again, or you can also try to right-click on the file name and save it directly to your computer. And that concludes my presentation. I'll turn it back over to Terry Schoonover now.
Thanks, Trish. Hi, everyone. This is Terry Schoonover again. I'll be leading the training for the next couple of agenda items. First, we'll be looking at viewing consumer funds. Of course, after a consumer is registered, the funds are assigned, and it's a very good thing to be able to go back into Provider Connect and view those assigned funds to a particular consumer. And to do this, start from the Provider Connect home, as seen below. You have two different links, specific consumer search on the left and in the body of the home page. Just click one of those. Brings you up to the search functionality. Your consumer ID will need to be entered, which is just the consumer's RIN number, the date of birth, and click search. That'll bring you to the demographics page. On the demographics page, just scroll to the bottom, and you'll see the button named View Consumer Registrations. Click, and you will see the consumer registrations. And here I've highlighted the funds and also the form. The funds, this particular consumer has WCC, which is the Williams Class Fund, 213, 350, 574, 860, and ABC. And you can see here the effective and expiration dates. Now, if you want to see a little more detail on these funds, for instance, the ABC has three separate benefit packages that can be assigned. So just because a consumer has ABC doesn't necessarily mean that they have a particular set of services that covers. You need to really know what benefit package is assigned to know that. So you would click the ILAS link that corresponds with ABC, and it's going to bring you to a page. At the top of that page is going to look like this. You're going to have eligibility status and first presentation indicator. Well, being that the three categories of ABC benefit packages are first presentation, target, and eligible, the whole idea of these two fields is to identify which of these three benefit packages have been assigned. And now, of course, if you look at eligibility status, you see TADL. Well, unless you know what TADL actually stands for and how it works in conjunction with the first presentation indicator, it's still going to be confusing to try to figure out which benefit package is actually assigned. So on the next slide, I've broken this down into a table. You'll see the benefit package assigned here in the center column. First SMI, you have target adult, target child, which either target benefit package will cover the same types of services, just adult and child. And then you have ABC eligible here at the bottom. And in the first column is the eligibility status and first presentation indicator as shown in Provider Connect, what we were just looking at. So on this first row, first presentation indicated is yes. We'll always assign the first SMI ABC benefit package. And in the last column is just a bit of clarification. Regardless of what the eligibility status is, if the first presentation indicator is yes, the eligibility status is overridden. It's always going to assign the first SMI package. It covers a larger range of services than eligible benefit package, so this is very good information as a provider to know. If we look at the second and third rows here, Eligibility status is TADL, and first presentation is no. Now, the TADL is what we saw on the previous page, and the reason target adult would be assigned for row two here is because the first presentation is no. If it was yes, of course, it would be overridden, and first SMI would be assigned. But in this case, a target benefit package would be assigned, and it currently covers the same services as first SMI benefit package. So again, this covers a larger date range of services than the eligible benefit package. And all of this is shown on the DMH service matrix as well. You'll see separate columns on the DMH service matrix for first SMI, target, and eligible, and the particular services that each cover. Now, if we look at the eligibility status of TCHD, and no first presentation is indicated as no, it will assign the ABC target child. And TCHD just stands for target child. It's just an abbreviation. Being the first presentation indicator is no, the target child benefit package is assigned. The target benefit package, like I said, the child covers the same as the adult target benefit package. If you look at the bottom row, eligibility status is ELIG, and first presentation is no. ABC eligible benefit package is assigned. And as I stated earlier, eligible benefit package covers a smaller number of services than first presentation and target benefit package. So by knowing this, you will know exactly which services are covered. There are many times that we see that a service may be billed and rejected just simply because the consumer had ABC eligible benefit package as opposed to ABC target or ABC SMI. And this brings us up to the next agenda item. IT customer support. From a provider's stance, anytime you have claims, billing issues, questions about registrations, authorization concerns, it's very important to know where to direct those questions to get the most efficient, effective answer. So to save you time, we've actually a list of a guide with basically just a list of contacts and example scenarios that you would use those contacts. Now, we do have this posted out on the Collaborative website. If you look at the top of the page, we have the Collaborative URL there. It's located on the home page in the Spotlight section in the upper left corner of that page. So if there are ever any revisions to this, that's where you can find them, and the link actually matches the title here, Customer Support Telephone Numbers. And so now let's just step through this table. The first two rows here are claims billing issues on or prior to 6/30/2011, and then the second row is issues on or after 7/1/2011. Well, that date has significant importance because that is the HFS transition period. That's when the HFS transition occurred. Whether or not your claims billing questions are before or after that time, you still direct all of those questions to HFS. And we do have the number listed here as 877-782-5565. You press 0 and ask for the community mental health support consultant, and they'll be able to assist you with those. Now, you'll also notice we have an HFS EDI help desk listed. Just in case you happen to have an HFS system failure or HFS system error of some type, you can contact those folks, and they can help you out as well. If your questions are in regards to registration or service authorization, whether you're a provider wanting to pre-authorize care, inquire about an existing authorization, or just registration concerns or any questions, you'll want to contact the Collaborative at the 866 number listed, select the provider menu, and then press 1, and that'll get you to a customer service agent. If you have technical difficulty with the Collaborative system, such as account disabled, your system is freezing or crashing, system unavailable errors, those are going to be directed to the EDI help desk at 888-247-9311. So it's very good to know the difference between these two types of questions. So if you're trying to submit a registration or an authorization of some type, and you're trying to get into the system and can't get into the system, or if you got in and you're clicking a button and it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing, well, even though you're attempting to submit a registration or an authorization, those really aren't registration authorization questions. Those are actually technical questions. Those are system failure questions. So you'd want to direct those to the EDI help desk. Clinical utilization management. If you have questions in that regard, call the collaborative at 866-359-7953, select the provider menu, press 1. Intelligence Connect reporting issues. All of those questions, please direct those to the EDI help desk at the 888 number. If you come across a scenario where you don't have a RIN, there's no RIN, or you have a Social Service Package B issue, Jay Hidalgo is still your primary contact. DHS customer support, and we have Jay's number there, 800-385-0872. If your questions are more along the lines of multiple RINs, then you'll want to contact the collaborative at the 866 number. Select the provider menu and press 1 again. And that will actually get you to a customer service agent, and we'll talk a little bit more in depth about multiple RIN issues here in just a second. The last row on this table, DMH policy issues. For any DMH policy issue questions or concerns, we would direct you to DMH regional staff. Now, for multiple RIN resolutions, and I've just reiterated the number that was on the table on the previous slide, but once you reach that customer service agent, what they're going to do is collect your preliminary information, the RINs that you're having issues with, that type of thing. And once they have all that information from you, they're going to pass this along to an eligibility specialist after they've logged this in the system. The eligibility specialist will then work with DMH. DMH ultimately directs the collaborative to keep or merge each individual RIN. So some scenarios, maybe a consumer was assigned 2 RINs and really should have never been assigned one of those RINs. So we will move all the registration, all the eligibility, all the authorization data over to the good or the keeper RIN. And in other scenarios, it may be fine for a consumer to have 2 RINs, but maybe they just had overlapping dates. Maybe it's a scenario where the old RIN expired on June 30th of 2012, and the new RIN has an effective date of July 1st, 2012. And if that's the case, then we divide up the registration, authorization, all the eligibility data accordingly. And this concludes the IT customer support portion of the training. And at this time, I'll turn the presentation over to Cheryl Masalunas.
Thank you, Terry. I'm Cheryl Masalunas. I'm a reporting analyst with the Collaborative, and I will be presenting the reporting portion of today's meeting. We'll be going over today the types of reports that are available on Intelligence Connect. We will look at some of the resources and tools that are available to assist you in running reports. We'll review how to access and run a report, and finally, who to contact in case you have any questions. Some general information. There are a variety of reports that are available. There are registration reports, which reflect consumer registrations, and there are claims reports, which reflect claims that were submitted. The reports are accessible via Provider Connect, which Amy showed you how to access earlier this afternoon. These reports can be run on demand, and the data in the reports is refreshed and available each Monday morning. Registration reporting. There are 2 detailed data sets that reflect consumer registration information that's entered upon the registration process. One of them reflects the clinical information, and the other reflects enrollment data. There are active consumer registration reports. The information provided on those reports reflect those registrations that are active on the date that the report is ran. There are closed consumer registration reports, and those reports reflect consumer registrations that are closed within a certain date range. And that date range is something that you specify when you're running the report. For instance, if you wanted to see all of the registrations that were closed between December 1st, 2012 and December 31st, 2012, you would enter that information when running the report. There are expiring consumer registration reports. And those reports reflect consumer registrations that are expiring within a certain number of days. Again, you specify the number of days you want to see. You can run a report to show all of the consumer registrations that are expiring within the next 45 days. Finally, there are open expired consumer registration reports, and these reflect expired registrations that have not yet been closed. Claims reporting. Something to keep in mind when you're running the claims reports is to know what claims you are looking for. There are two claims reporting folders. The first is claims reporting, and the reports that reside in that folder reflect claims that were submitted to Value Options before July 1st, 2011. The second claims reporting folder is the HFS claims reporting folder. The reports in this folder reflect claims that were submitted to HFS on or after July 1st, 2011. There are a number of resources and tools that are available to assist in running reports, and these resources have been updated to reflect the most current reports. These documents are available on the Collaborative's website as well as on Intelligence Connect. There's a tip sheet for collaborative reporting, which is a detailed user guide showing you step-by-step and screen-by-screen how to access and run the reports that are available. There are four detailed dataset field description documents. One of them reflects the claims, which is the Value Options submitted claims. One reflects HFS claims. And then there is both the clinical and enrollment registration detailed datasets. Finally, there is a report listing document, which shows each of the reports by folder and a brief description of what's available on those reports. Accessing reports. Earlier this afternoon, Amy showed you how to log into and access Provider Connect. Once you're in Provider Connect, on the left-hand side, on the list of links that are there, there is an option for reports. To access the Intelligence Connect reports, you click on that reports link. When you click on that link, it will pass you right through to Intelligence Connect, which is where all the reports are available. At this point, you would double-click on the document list folder. On this screen, you will see the folders that are available for the reports, which we just briefly went over. If there's a plus sign next to the folders for the reports, you can click on it to access the additional information or additional folders that are available underneath. You would then select the folder for which you want to run reports in. For our purposes today, we're going to be utilizing the HFS claims reporting folder. You would double-click on that folder, and the next screen that you see shows you all of the reports that are available within the folder that you have selected. To select the report that you want to run, simply click on the report. To highlight it, right-click, and then select Schedule. After you click Schedule, you will see the screen that is up on this slide and the options that are available on the left-hand side. There's really only two of these items that you need to worry about when running reports. The first is the parameters. Click on Parameters on the left-hand side to show all of the information that you will need to enter to successfully run the report. When running reports, you want to be sure that you complete each parameter value and that none of them say empty before you click on Schedule. There are different types of parameters. There are multi-value parameters. There are parameters where you select a value from a drop-down list. And finally, there are date parameters. We'll go through some of those examples in the next few slides. To enter the information for each of the parameters, you click on the Edit button. When you click on the Edit button, the parameter information will display. This is an example of a multiple value parameter. This specific example is for member number. What you would do is if there is one or more member numbers that you want to run the report for, you would enter the member number in the Enter a Value box here. Then you would click on the arrow to the right to move that value into the Selected Values box. If you had an additional member number to enter, you would enter it here and click on the arrow to bring it into the Selected Values box. Once you have entered all of the member numbers or all of the whatever the value is for the parameter that you're completing, you would then click on OK. It's very important that after you enter your parameter, you click on OK and not the Schedule button. The Schedule button you click on only after you've completed all of the parameters. So once this is complete, you click on OK, and you'll go back to that initial parameter screen where you can then select the next parameter to complete. Here's another example of a multiple value parameter field. In this example, what we've done is clicked on the asterisk that is in the Available Values box and then clicked on the arrow to the right of that box to move that into the Selected Values. And the default, if you select the asterisk, the default for that is it will pull back all of the values. So for this particular example, which is service code, it will pull back all of the service codes for the report that you are running. Again, you're going to want to click on OK, which will return you to the parameter screen where you can select the next one. The next example we have here is a drop-down list. For this parameter type, you would simply click on the arrow in the drop-down box and select one of the values that are available. Again, once you've selected a value, you will click on OK. The final example we have is a date value parameter. In date value parameters, you want to be sure to follow the input format that has been provided. For example, this input format is a 4-digit year, a 2-digit month, and a 2-digit day. What's been entered into the box is 2012-09-01. This reflects the date of September 1st, 2012. Again, you would click on OK after you've entered your parameter. Once you've completed all of your parameters, your screen should look something like this, where a value is listed in each of these boxes. Again, you do not want to see the word empty in any of these. When running reports, the most common failure or reason for not being able to obtain data within the reports is that these value boxes are left empty. So again, you want to be sure that you complete all of the values. At this point, you can go ahead and click on Schedule. However, if you want to change the format of the report, you can go over to the left-hand side and click on Format. All of the reports that are programmed and available in Intelligence Connect have a default file format. So the format in which the report outputs, we've selected what we believe to be the best way or the best file version for you to view the data in. If you go ahead after you've entered all of your parameters and simply click on Schedule, the report will run and output in what we have set as the default. However, sometimes there is a need for you to have the report in a different format. If that is the case, click on Format. In the Format Options box, you can click on the drop-down list here and select whichever type of file format you would like to see the report in. Some of the additional formats that are available are text files, PDF files, and CSV files. Once you've changed the format, you can go ahead and click on Schedule. Once you've clicked on Schedule, you will see the History screen for the report that you are running. This screen will show all of the report instances that you have ran within the last 7 days. The most recent instance will show at the top. You will see here we have the time that you ran the report. That's the time that you clicked on the schedule button. You will have the title of the report. This will show your user ID. It will list all of the parameters that you entered to run the report. This shows the format of the report. That's the format that it will output into. And then it shows the status of the report. And while it's processing, it will say pending. In order to refresh to see an updated status, you will click on the blue refresh arrows to refresh this screen. Once the report is completed, you will see the status change to success. At this point, the instance time changes into a hyperlink. At this point, you can click on that hyperlink to view the report in the output format that was selected. Here's just a brief overview on how to run a report, the quick steps. Select the report to run. Right-click on the report name, select Schedule, click on the Parameters link on the left-hand side, complete all of the parameters. If necessary, you can change your format output and click on Schedule. Once you click on that hyperlink to show the instance date hyperlink to show the report will open in the format that you have selected. And this is an example of the Illinois Claims Detailed Dataset HFS report. And this shows all of the information for the parameters that were entered on the report of the claims. And this specific example, again, is claims that were submitted to HFS. Few reminders about reports. As I said earlier, reports are available for 1 week, and that is 7 days. You can save when you open the Excel file or the PDF file, the version of the report that you ran. When you open it, you can save it locally to your computer. However, if you're relying on Intelligence Connect for the reports, you'll only be able to see on that history screen the reports that were ran within the last 7 days. Keep in mind not to leave any empty parameters open. You want to make sure that you're entering all information. You also want to be sure that you're entering the parameters in the format that is indicated. Keep in mind that the data that is available on Monday morning is refreshed data, and that's as of the previous Friday. When viewing HFS claims reports, they reflect the claim files that Value Options received from HFS through the previous week Friday. HFS claims can be viewed on these reports prior to when you receive your payment remittance from HFS. And finally, the documentation. As I said earlier, there are some resources and tools that are available to assist in running and understanding reports. They are available both on Intelligence Connect and on the Illinois Mental Health Collaborative website. And I'll show you both of those locations for the resource documents. On the collaborative's website, under provider information, if you scroll down, there is a heading that says reporting, and that lists all of the documents that are available to assist in reporting. There's the provider guide, the report listing, and then the field description documents for the detailed data sets. Also, within Intelligence Connect, those same documents are available. You'll go to your document list. You'll expand your folders. And right in the root of the folder that you have that says Illinois Provider Connect, those same documents are available. To view these documents, you simply right-click and select View. That will open each of the documents. Finally, who to contact. If you have questions or if there are issues in running reports, you can contact the eSupport Help Desk at 888-247-9311. You can also contact the help desk via the email that is listed on the screen. Any questions that are out of the scope for the eSupport help desk will be forwarded to the collaborative reporting staff for resolution. This concludes the reporting portion of today's presentation. And with that, I will turn the presentation back over to Amy Montgomery.
Hi, Audra. We can now open the line for questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your request, press star 2. One moment. First question comes from Danita Boyce. Your line is open.
Yes. I have a question about updated information.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure about it. You said click on, and I didn't get the rest of that. Like, you want an address update? You want to update the information? Can you hear me?
Are you talking about in the registration?
Yes.
The online registration portion? You will just scroll down to click that change address button. Once you click that button, you'll fill in the appropriate fields and hit submit.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I am showing no further questions at this time. We do have a question now from Michelle Wells. Your line is open.
Thank you.
Yes, I have a question on the parameters in running the reports. It seemed that we could only choose one date. So if I wanted to run, for example, to see what was paid for an entire month, am I able to run parameter choosing a month, or do I have to choose September 1st and then another report for September 2nd, et cetera?
Hi, this is Cheryl. Actually, I showed one report date parameter as an example, but for each of the reports, the majority of them, the way that they run is they have a start date and an end date. So if you wanted to run a report for the entire month of June, you would enter the first day of June in the start date and the last day of June in the end date. That way you'll get all of the data for the entire month in one report.
Thank you. And then I could do it for multiple consumers all on the same report because there were different parameters that I could enter on a different screen, correct?
That is correct. You can either, if you have the consumer's RINs, and you only wanted to run it for, say, you had, you know, 4 or 5, you could enter each one of their RINs, like I showed you, and bring that number over, move the arrow over. Or if you wanted to see all of the consumers for that month of June, you could select the asterisk to pull back all of the consumers.
Correct. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
The next question comes from Norma Ripplinger. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm wondering, when the speaker talked about the batch registration and that we could get response files on our batch registrations, what was the timeline for retrieval?
This is Trish. I believe it's fairly shortly. Lisa, do you happen to know the time frame in which they receive response files for batch registration submissions?
It's usually pretty immediate, you know, unless there's an issue with, you know, File Connect actually processing the files and getting them into the system to actually run the jobs. It's pretty immediate. So okay. I would say within the hour.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, please press star 1 to ask a question. We have another question from Norma Ripplinger. Your line is open.
Thank you. I was not able to get the video portion of the presentation. Am I correct in assuming that it will be on the collaborative website?
Yes, it will, Norma. I will go over that information with the conclusion.
Great. Thanks.
Audra, do we have any questions in the queue?
I am showing no questions.
Okay, we'll just wait just a minute or so. Mary, before we conclude today, do you have any closing remarks?
Well, just to thank everyone for calling in today, and I trust you found the presentation informative and useful. So thank you. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you. If there are no more questions in the queue, then that will conclude our call for today. I would like to remind the audience that today's call audio and PowerPoint will be posted under the Provider Resources setting. On the provider information page of the collaborative's website. This will be in MP3 format and available for download within 2 to 3 business days. I would also like to remind everyone that we value your feedback, so please take a few minutes to complete the brief survey that will appear when you close out of the online forum today. And Audra, could you please push the speakers to the post-conference, and you may now disconnect the main line.
Thank you. One moment.